Gentlemen, courtesy for the performer.
Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Thou art more lovely and more temperate. Rough winds do shake the darling buds of May, and summer's lease hath all...
You wrote that?
Yesterday, as a matter of fact.
It was written by an earthman named Shakespeare a long time ago.
Which does not alter the fact that I wrote it again yesterday.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge...
This is Tyler Orton, living the dream life of a mineralogist.
That's right. That's right.
Do you get the reference, Cam?
Yes, I do.
Nice. Cam, what is our conundrum this week?
This week, we are going to examine what happens when Star Trek goes green.
How so?
Well, we're going to look at the species, the Orion, the Gorn, perhaps another mystery one coming up later,
okay.
And how these iconic alien species impacted the series, or did they?
Well, you know, I think what do you think is kind of the inspiration for this? Like, why are these three aliens worthy of examination, Cam?
I think because the sense is these are hugely iconic alien species. You go to a con... Fans are dressed as them. There's merchandise everywhere with them. We know them just off by heart. But does the series love them as much as the fans do?
And it's interesting because we definitely see them. We're jumping off of iconic characters from the original series that were not necessarily loved so much in the following series. But then I do think that we do get another taste of them in Enterprise, where we are getting a bit of that fan service as well.
Yeah. But it took a long time to turn that ship around.
Oh, it certainly did.
For some of the most recognizable faces in the franchise.
So, Cam, why don't we get started? Who should we start off with here?
Why don't we start with the Orion?
Okay.
You know, we first saw glimpses of the Orion in The Cage, the pilot for the original Star Trek starring Jeffrey Hunter that didn't go to air, but ultimately went to air as the Menagerie cut up. But the first sign of an Orion we get is an initial hint that Pike would like to deal in Orion women, which is a very interesting confession to start your series off with a captain. But then later we get to see the Talosians try to tempt him with the image of this woman he's met, Vina, as an Orion slave girl.
Yeah, we've talked about this iconic image before. Do you think it's an iconic image because of what it represents in the series, or I think my theory though is this is an image that's always in the end credits.
Right.
People really associate it with Star Trek so much because they see it in every single episode.
No, I think that makes complete sense because I don't know that fans were like diehard on the Menagerie.
I like the episode myself.
Sure.
You know,
but when you look at some of the other episodes in season one, I don't know that the Menagerie is the one that people are taking the great iconic moments from.
Sure.
I mean, I don't know. Like,
well, I don't know. You got Pike in the wheelchair.
What do you think is the most iconic image, though, to take away from this two-parter? Had you never seen The Cage, do you think it would be Vina? Do you think it would be the Talosians? Or do you think it would be Burnt Pike?
It's either Burnt Pike or Vina. And I think mostly because Vina's in the end credits.
Right.
That said, look, the Orions, they pop up throughout more than just this episode here in the original series.
Well, they really don't pop up in this one, because what we're seeing is Vina's an Orion, so it's not even an Orion. She's more of an image created by the Talosians.
Yeah.
How do you think that image compares to the characters we see in, like, Whom Gods Destroy?
With, say, Marta.
Right, played by Yvonne Craig, yeah.
Okay, that's fascinating, because my brain, I've always associated, you know, the Orions as pretty much Vina.
Right.
And so seeing Marta with, like, a kind of a different sort of hairstyle... And a seemingly different sort of personality was a bit of a wake-up call for me that I guess there's more depth and nuance to these aliens, even though they're all into dancing, that's for sure.
They definitely are. Marta's a tough one to really pin down as being representative of the Orions, though, because she's insane.
Sure.
I remember there was a film critic who was doing a rewatch around the time Suicide Squad was coming out, and he referenced this episode and said this was the far more convincing portrayal of the Joker and Harley Quinn. And I get it. Like, the portrayal of Garth and Marta is really, really close to how, you know, the comics had written Joker and Harley Quinn.
Okay.
It's actually...
I never even thought about it that way.
It's much more compelling in the sense that, like, Garth is sort of, you know, the guy in charge, but he's insane. And she's, like, also crazy, but dangerous on her own. And it's how these two are kind of drawn to each other, but at the same time, repel back outwards.
Yeah.
And can cause a lot of damage. Like, I think, to me, Marta is the most compelling Orion on the original series. Not that it's a lot of competition.
Yeah, sure.
Because there's, you know, of course, the Journey to Babel presents one who's, I guess, an Orion.
Okay. kind of in the background.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. Exactly. Well,
dressed up as an Andorian.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's an Orion, but it has none of the facets of being an Orion.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh, okay, well, that is one, but whatever.
Yeah.
But no, Marta, to me, is tough to look at from the point of view of the Orion, because when I think about what the Orions represent in the world of Star Trek, I'm not sure Marta fits that mold.
Okay, well, how so, though? Because the way I picture the Orions, they're kind of seductive women. They're big into dancing.
Yes.
You know, I get that from both Marta and Vina. How does Marta, say, break the mold that we see versus Vina and versus maybe other portrayals?
I think for me the problem is that Orions, to me, when I look at them, the Orion females always seem to be in control of a situation.
Okay.
They play the submissive sort of exotic dancer type, but it's more of like the sirens drawing sailors to the rocks, essentially. You know, these guys always seem to get into trouble around Orion women. Whereas, like, Marta has that quality. We see her, you know, doing this elaborate dance, but Marta's completely out of control.
And do you think that's because of the mental health issues she's suffering from?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I think Garth is the one who's in control of this larger situation. She's more of the wild card.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel like, just because of her own psychological state, she's able to kind of manipulate and control people the way that maybe the traditional archetype of the Orion woman would.
So do you think then, if we never had the menagerie or the cage, that all we knew really about the Orions was Journey to Babel and Whom Gods Destroy, do you think that they would have been as iconic based pretty much only on Marta?
I think they would have.
Okay.
To me, Marta is actually a really compelling character within the world of Star Trek.
I totally think she's compelling, but I'm going to go back to that theory that I just had about how I think one of the big reasons why they're so compelling is because they appeared in the end credits every single episode.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. But maybe Marta would have been in the end credits, at least for the last two episodes.
Yeah, exactly. But the other thing that's interesting about her is, do you buy that she genuinely likes Kirk, or that she's fond of Kirk?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think, again, she's such a wild card that she's always sort of looking for opportunity. And I think she sees Kirk as not only an opportunity, but also like a bit of a toy to play with.
Yeah.
Because what I love about Whom Gods Destroy is that, you know, Kirk and Spock get trapped in this asylum. And it's just fun to watch these two surrounded by complete lunatics. And just, I love how Shatner and Nimoy play it so flat. Like, they do not want to be there. They're not engaging with these people. Like, kind of like, heads down, guys. Let's just get through this.
You say they play it flat, although Shatner, the actor, not Kirk, the character, has one of the most explosive temper tantrums I've ever witnessed in all of Star Trek.
Yes.
When essentially Garth of Izar, disguised as Kirk, tries to beam up and he doesn't give the right code.
Yes.
And he just throws a total fit.
Yes.
Quite amazing. I was never able to find like the best GIF that I wanted for that, but if I can make it on my own cam, you'll be getting a lot of that in the next little while.
I have faith that you can create it.
Okay.
But yeah.
So you're more of a fan of Vina than Marta.
Marta than Vina.
Or, I'm sorry, Marta than Vina, if only because Marta's more of a fully fleshed out character.
And I just think like Yvonne Craig nails this character. Like, she's fantastic.
You're a fan of Yvonne Craig as well. Beyond just Marta, right?
I mean...
From, like, Batman, right?
Well, the thing is, I'm not as big on her in Batman because, like, Batgirl shows up kind of in the waning days of that show.
Did you just say waning?
Oh my God, that's good. But you know, where the show was becoming less fresh. You know, she was thrown in as a last minute save.
Okay.
But I think she's good as Batgirl. Those episodes are the weakest of the series.
So do you think Joss Whedon, who's going to be doing the next Batgirl film, he should take, you know, some history lessons, get an Orion slave girl as the next Batgirl? Does that mean Saya Batten from Enterprise?
Or is Rachel Nichols the one with the star value?
I wonder if Rachel Nichols' star value is waning, so to speak, at this point. She was really big. Well, she was on her way up, like, I'd say, like, 7-8 years ago.
Right.
I was actually a fan of her from Alias. I thought she was great in that. And what was she? She was in Dark City, too. What was the last Rachel Nichols joint you've seen?
Oh, what was it? The Tyler Perry movie where he played Alex Cross.
Oh, okay.
I think it's called Alex Cross.
I thought you were going to drop a Medea reference on something.
No, it wasn't like a Medea Halloween or whatever. Yeah. No, it was the Alex Cross movie. I think that was the last theatrical joint that she showed up in, to the best of my knowledge.
Should Joss Whedon recognize the history here and cast Batgirl, former Orion?
It can't hurt, I guess.
Sure.
Well, yes, it can.
But yeah.
But what I found interesting was that, according to Jimmy Doohan, so I'm taking this with a grain of salt, Yvonne Craig was under consideration to play Vina originally.
Okay.
Because she was a trained dancer, and that's, you know, what got her, I'm sure, the job, at least probably for Whom Gods Destroy as well, because obviously she has this elaborate dance, although the cast seems to ridicule the dance while she's doing it.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of mean.
I was like, I thought it was pretty good myself.
Yeah, I do like the comparisons Spock makes to Vulcan children in nursery school doing similar dances to her.
Have we been ripped off of scenes of Vulcan children doing like ballet-like dances?
Look, there's going to be Vulcan characters in Star Trek Discovery.
Yes.
There must be a nursery school scene featuring CG children doing these sorts of Marta-esque dances.
Yeah. Right. But no, it seems like just a, you know, a bunch of, assuming she was up for Vina, which again, I don't know, question mark. That one's kind of lost to history, but I'm glad that she didn't get that job and wound up as Marta, because I think she's really good.
Yeah.
And then what's also interesting is Marta wasn't even supposed to be an Orion in this episode. It was supposed to be Mara, and it was supposed to be a Klingon.
Oh, okay.
And it was a minor role that was then rewritten to Orion, and Mara was moved to Day of the Dove.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. What would you have liked to have seen more? A woman Klingon in an asylum, or what we got here with Mara?
No, I'm a big fan of Marta. To me, like, Marta's... There's not a lot of, like, great female Star Trek villains, especially in the early years. But I think between Marta...
Cat's paw.
Sure. No, I think more of the Romulan commander.
Yeah.
In the Enterprise incident.
She's so great, they didn't even give her a name.
Well, you know. It was a different time.
Okay.
But it is interesting that Star Trek, the original series, the third season, is considered by and large the weakest.
Yeah.
But it gives the two best female villains of the series.
Hey, I like this episode, though. A very strong outing for season three. So does this series really understand, you know, what makes, say, Marta or Vina iconic?
I think they realized that the image of the green female character is something that really captures the imagination. And it does tie back to classic depictions of essentially exotic women dancing on screen. You know, you'd see it with like gypsies or Egyptian women in old movies. This is really just an offshoot of that, except an alien version of that. And I think that that sort of image works in, you know, as in film. Now, I'm sure we'll see that change over time, but in this period in the 60s, it works.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I think they know that it's a very easy go-to, but it is interesting to me that they don't seem that interested in the original series in peppering in more Orion characters throughout. You know, we see episodes where they'll throw in a random, like, Andorian or a random...
Oh, we saw it in Whom Gods Destroy.
Yeah, or a random Tellarite, also in Whom Gods Destroy.
What do you think of the Tellarite makeup here versus their initial appearance in Journey to Babel?
They were saving money on that one.
Okay.
He's a background character.
Yeah, is it interesting to you, though, that we do have an Orion, a Tellarite, and an Andorian featured prominently in Journey to Babel as well as Whom Gods Destroy?
It's kind of like when they have their Alien Showcase episodes, they go to their old standbys.
Hey, you know what? They're all iconic, so...
But I am interested, why do you think it is that when we look at the original series, which obviously didn't have the serialization of later, you know, like Enterprise or DS9, Why do you think they keep coming back to, say, the Romulans and the Klingons and really wanting to portray more into their sort of the depth of these characters and this alien race, whereas the Orions or the Tellarites or the Andorians become more of just kind of pop-up figures with a lot, without a lot of depth?
Like, why did future series choose to go with Romulans and Klingons?
But even TOS, because they focus more on Klingons and Romulans than those other ones.
Okay. I think because of what they represent, though, from a storytelling perspective, this Cold War mentality here, whereas the Andorians and Tellarites, they're part of the Federation. They're very iconic, you know. The Orions, I still kind of see them more as one-offs in that one of them appeared in, like, this failed pilot, and then it was chopped up into this two-part episode that was made on fly. And the second one that we really actually saw was kind of a very iconic look, which looks kind of great for kind of this rogues gallery of aliens trapped in this asylum.
Right.
So it makes sense to me. And I can also understand why they initially thought of putting a Klingon in that asylum as well.
Yeah.
Just those kind of cool iconic looks, right?
I will say, I think it would have been more interesting to see a female Klingon in the asylum if it was like a TNG era Klingon, kind of like a Lursa or a Bator. Versus the original series, female Klingons didn't have kind of the fiery kind of personality and like physical presence.
No, they're no B'Elanna Taurus there.
They are not.
Okay. So, Cam, look, we do have mentions of the Orion Syndicate throughout, mostly, I'd say, Deep Space Nine. We never actually got to see any more Orions between Next Gen, DS9, and Voyager, though. Whatever background information or whatever, you know, stuff was going on in production that prevented that, whatever. But do you think it was a big missed opportunity not to physically see these very iconic green aliens, even though they were referenced extensively?
I always felt it was, because to me, like, Star Trek is a universe, and I like to see members of that universe. I think that's something that's actually Star Wars has done really well, where, you know, you watch any of the new movies, you'll see familiar alien species just kind of peppered into the background. It just makes the universe feel like these cultures exist all over the place.
Like, that pig man in Rogue One that appeared at the cantina.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously. And, you know, like, I liked seeing, you know, the Orions thrown into kind of even just like background characters or bit parts in the animated series.
Sure.
You know, obviously with the animated series, they don't have the makeup budget. Right? Like, animation costs the same no matter what the scene is.
Yeah.
So they can draw in Orion characters, and it's the same as, you know, having to, you know, draw whoever. It doesn't matter. Whereas when you get to an original series episode, it costs money to put, you know, into the makeup.
Well, let me very briefly mention the animated series Time Trap, in which we're introduced to Verna? What's her name?
Devna.
Devna. I don't know where I got Verna from.
She was obviously a very memorable character to you.
But essentially, she's in charge of law in this kind of universe pocket that's essentially their version of the Bermuda Triangle. She's very much all about the law, but she seems like a much more empowered character than, say, Vina or Marta are.
Is she the most progressive Orion character we've seen?
Up until this point, I would say so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
which is interesting.
Yeah.
But while she apparently is a dancer, like, we don't see that that's what represents that character.
Although,
like, we see she is very much like the logical person in this council. She's the speaker of the council, and I enjoyed that.
Yeah. But the reason I think it makes for a good segue into kind of the next part of this conversation is we do see them pop up in Enterprise, and it's a bit of a turn on what we anticipated Orion culture to be like, you know, and that's we find that it's actually more of a matriarchy here, where it's actually the women have that power with that those seductive pheromones that they can give off and take over ships. And when you initially watched an episode like Bound, Cam, what was your initial reaction to this portrayal here of the Orions?
I mean, to me, it felt like a logical way to deal with that character in a modern setting, at least modern for that era, for that period of time.
15 years ago.
Yeah, 15 years ago. You know, because I think they are a challenging, just given the sort of the cultural baggage that comes with their very creation in the first place in the 60s.
Their name is literally Slave Girl.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so, yeah, it's like they are iconic. There's actually another element of Enterprise I'd like to get to in a second. But yeah, when they show up in Bound, and we have this reveal that it is the women in power, to me it feels like a logical way to explain them, that at least takes a bit of the sting away. I don't know that it fully does. I think a lot of people do still have issues with the Orion.
Yeah.
I think the problem is that they were founded in a problematic way. And so it's kind of like backpedaling from a bad place to start with. And I don't know that you can ever fully remove the origins of the Orion. But I think that Bound at least does what it can. It's a very simple, kind of goofy episode that's not trying to tackle the issue in a serious way either.
Yeah. Look, it was their way of doing fan service while trying to write around, I think, a big issue that they had to deal with there.
Yeah.
A few episodes before that, we did see some Orion gents in Borderland.
Yeah, which...
What did you think about the first ever Orion males that we ever got to see without an Andorian disguise on?
Right. Yeah, they show vaguely some males in the animated series that are fine. But to me, I look at this as like the real representation of the male Orions in the market. To me, what I actually really like this portrayal of the Orions. I think it's actually more...
Bodybuilders. Yeah.
Not so much the men, but just this representation of the Orions is, to me, what we need to, I think, maybe look at going forward, which is that the Orion market is a scary place. Like, it's terrifying. And I like that the guys are portrayed as being scary. You know, this isn't like a playful market of like, oh, you know, take the dancing girls. You know, it's like, no, it looks awful.
That one ensign who is trapped in the cage, he was freaking out.
Yeah.
Don't blame him.
And it makes sense that these guys would be in these jobs because while we learn, you know, in Bound that the whole thing's kind of a hoax to get these guys trapped by these women.
Yeah.
It makes sense that you would have these guys essentially playing the role of these like prison guards. So, because you wouldn't buy it if they were like these diminutive little fellows who were like, you know, hey, guys, who wants to take this one home?
And do you think the Enterprise production team understood what made the Orion so iconic back in the original series days?
I think they do. Yeah. I think, especially like with Bound, I think with like the whole dance sequence, which is actually, I think, really well staged and clever. Like, it feels fun in a way that I think the original series does. They understand the facets of the Orion that have kept them... They understand why people are dressing up at them at cons, you know, 50 years later. And I think they bring that energy back to them. And I just wish that Enterprise kind of had a lot of baggage in the sense that, like, the Orions hadn't been seriously dealt with in, like, 40 years or what have you, whatever the time distance is between their last appearance in TOS into Enterprise. That's why I do think it was a missed opportunity for maybe, like, DS9 or TNG to kind of continue the evolution a bit. Because Enterprise was held at a very, like, that episode was held up very, like, under a lot of scrutiny. Because this was the episode that was bringing them back. And people were more interested in looking at, why did you do this?
Yeah.
And I don't know that the episode supports that sort of scrutiny.
Okay. Well, so how should they be handled? Would you be up for the Orions returning in Star Trek Discovery?
I think they have to.
Yeah.
Because I think one of the best things for Orions was actually the Rachel Nichols character in the Star Trek 2009.
She's playing a cadet.
Yeah. Like, I like that we just see an Orion character in Starfleet. And I would like to see something along those lines. I know Roberta Orsi actually had a really weird quote where he talked about that character and said, like, she'd escaped on, like, an underground railroad.
Okay.
I'm like, that's
that doesn't really fly with what we know about them in Enterprise, because from what my takeaway is, we for 40 years we'd been misinterpreting what the slave girl meant. It's she's not a slave, she does the enslavement, and that's what turned it around for me on Enterprise there. So this Underground Railroad thing, maybe he just missed that episode of Enterprise.
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like the Enterprise way is a more... it doesn't depress me like the Roberta Orsi worldview.
So going forward with Star Trek Discovery, you figure, are we potentially having more stories in which we encounter the Orion Syndicate or just one-off kind of characters that are Orion slave girls that are also, I don't know, trying to take over the ship to some degree? Or how do we deal with them in a way that's interesting and new and doesn't seem derivative?
Here's my question to you. Do you think the representations of the Orion slave girl are gone? Like, do you think we're more likely just to see Orions worked into the show?
Like, serving on the ship?
Sure. playing like just characters yeah. who are Orion,
as opposed to like antagonists.
Yes, or the dancing girls, which we've seen throughout the series. Like, do you think the idea of the Orion slave girl, you know, the dancing girl, is going to go?
It's going to be tough if you have a ship led by two female crew members.
Yeah,
and you're not going to get the same reaction necessarily from them. Although, who knows the sexual orientation of these characters, but it's not going to fly the same way that maybe Bakula's acting did with Bound and his reaction to all those. So,
no.
And I also think we're in a bit of a different era.
Yeah, I mean, the J.J. Abrams movies wouldn't even touch the dancing Orion slave girl. The dancing,
yeah. Are you okay with that? I'll say I am. I'm down for new kinds of storytelling. I don't need to see dancing green women. I kind of know that side of that culture there.
Yeah.
Why don't we explore some other facets of this culture?
Yeah, like, to me, it feels like there's a lot more to explore because, you know, DS9 frequently referenced, or at least in, you know, 5-6 episodes, the Orion Syndicate. I would love to know more about the Orion Syndicate. Yeah. I think, actually, DS9 kind of did a disservice to the Orion in not delving more into it.
I think they were just hampered by the fact that they weren't allowed to portray them.
Right.
All they could do is just say, oh, it's the Orion Syndicate. They're this criminal organization.
Because that fascinates me.
Yeah.
It paints a much, you know, we talk about world building with Star Trek. That's world building with the Orion. We don't know a lot about Orion's culture coming off of TOS and, you know, the animated series and what have you. But to me, DS9 is expanding it in interesting ways. I would just like to see more of it portrayed versus talked about.
It's a show don't tell sort of idea.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I gotcha. I'll give DS9 a pass in that they were bringing Orions back into the picture to a degree that we had not seen in Next Generation, that we did not see again throughout Voyager or up until Enterprise.
Do you think we will see an Orion crew member at some point?
Well, we've seen one in the Kelvinverse.
But I mean actually like a main cast member.
Yeah, no.
No.
Like, not a main cast member not necessarily, maybe recurring to a certain degree, but I don't necessarily know if... I think the new writers, they want new aliens that we can explore, and I just from a creative endeavor, I think they would want to come up with new ideas, and that would not necessarily go back to using these green aliens that
right.
Very iconic, and people are like, oh yeah, I know that deal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's all right, sir.
Okay, well, why don't we move into another green alien species, one that I'm more than a little familiar with, and that's the Gorn.
Yes. First introduced to us in the episode Arena.
Yes.
Quite fond of destruction, you'd say.
Oh, yeah.
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 Okay.
I love these characters. And this episode is so fantastic. I just love how tense it is. Like, talk about a showcase for an alien species. Like, is there a better episode in the original series for showcasing an alien?
Well, just like nonstop. It's literally like the crew, all but Kirk, watching this guy on a view screen from planet surface after Kirk and this Gorn Armada captain are sent to fight each other to the death on this one M-class planet.
Right.
Look, what this taught me is the Gorn, they don't necessarily have the greatest fighting skills, but
I don't know what you're talking
they
about.
They are resilient, though.
Yes.
You can toss boulders at them. You can shoot a ballistic weapon at them, and they'll still survive that. I have to say I'm kind of impressed with these guys.
Yeah, they're pretty badass. But when I look at like a lot of the aliens, you know, throughout the original series, very few of them get like the showcase episodes. Even Klingons, I feel like they don't get the showcases that like the Gorn does. Maybe you could argue Balance of Terror with the Romulans.
Sure.
But to me, like the Gorn, it's just like, man, that is a spotlight episode for the Gorn.
Do you think it, at the time that they knew that they were going to do something that would catch on as much as it did, whenever you think of Star Trek, one of the reasons we're doing this episode is whenever you think of Star Trek, you think of, say, Gorn or...
Right.
Vina, for example, you know, those are iconic images. Do you think going into the design of this particular alien, they had something that they really wanted to make something iconic, something that was not going to be forgettable?
I think so. I mean, the idea of a giant reptile man is something very synonymous with like classic sci-fi, especially, you know, this is 1966. They're looking at the 40s and 50s. That's the sort of thing you would see on the cover of like sci-fi magazines.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, Attacker on Mars type things. And this was actually adapted from a short story in a magazine called Astounding Science Fiction. I don't know if it was a reptile man in that story, but It wouldn't surprise me if it was.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could just tell that, like, the design of this suit, you know, was designed by Hua Chang. And he did a hell of a job. You know, with the limitations of a TV budget, he created a look that is so iconic. It's cheesy, but it's cheesy in all the best ways.
Well, yeah, you're not going to forget about it anytime soon, which is why when it was adapted to Star Trek Enterprise,
yeah.
Do you think they made a mistake going the CG route as opposed to practical?
I do, really, yeah, I really do. I do not like the look of the Gorn in Enterprise at all.
Is it just because it's so obviously CG?
Yeah, the CG does not work at all to me. Maybe in 2004. Whatever it was, 2004?
Yeah, 2005, I believe. Yeah, 2005. And this, of course, is in A Mirror Darkly Part 2, the right. Mirror Universe episode on Enterprise, where we have the Gorn Slar is a slave master aboard the USS Defiant, which had disappeared in the Tholian web, and it pops up in a different universe in a different time.
Tholians, you say, huh?
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, we should talk about them sometime.
Maybe sometime, yeah.
But yeah, like, I mean, to me, the problem is that the CG, while passable, I guess, at that time period, is just so bad. Like, you know, they didn't have much money to work with. TV CG now is at least acceptable. It just looks bad. And to me, if you're going to bring the Gorn back, and I think, to me, there's a reason they never had before. I don't think it was just like, you know, we just don't want to do a TNG alien. I just think the Gorn was so special and iconic within the world of Star Trek that no one really wanted to do it unless you're going to give it a really great reason to come back.
Why try to reach back to perfection?
Exactly. You know.
Won't you just stumble? Which they did.
There's a lesson there.
I think there are some interesting things that they're trying to do with Slar in that I loved his kind of, he had a more regal voice than I ever thought.
I love the voice of the Gorn in the original series.
The slithery snake voice.
The one that was like, say, you know, trying to get Kirk to turn himself in. He's like, I will be merciful. It's just like the most like bizarre pronunciation of English. And he's just like walking around doing like both like the roars and these awkward English sentences. I kind of love it. Like if you take me back to like that year, 1966, and they're like telling him like, do the voice of a reptile man. It's like, that's the voice.
Okay.
There's no question. But yeah, the one when we see in Enterprise, it's a little more civil.
I dig what they're trying to do it a little different. It's also a mirror universe.
Yes.
So, and look, there's also a great gag where they engaged the gravity plating and pulled Slar down to the ground, which is pretty fun to watch.
Did Slar feel like a bit of a pushover to you, though?
I don't know. He's versus the original Gorn.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I'll say, Slar seemed pretty dang tough. But if you put Slar up against the original Gorn, yeah, the original Gorn is taking it home.
I mean, the original Gorn is getting boulders, like, bowled right into his head and getting up.
Kirk was literally going to have to take, like, a diamond stalactite and jam it through his eye socket in order to kill him after shooting him with this cannon.
Right.
And the only reason he was able to build that cannon, Cam, is because that planet they were on, it was a mineralogist's dream.
Tyler, if you were dropped on that planet, would that ever occur to you to build that gun?
I would run away from the Gorn as fast as I could.
Do you think you could keep away from the Gorn?
I
think I could.
But it's a reptile, though. Like,
yeah, that's true.
I think that it could catch up to you pretty quickly.
And do reptiles need much sleep?
I don't... Probably not. Maybe. Well, yeah. Well, what about alligators, though? All they do is rest.
That's true.
So, I don't know. I don't know what I would do to defeat... I would not be able to figure out a ballistic weapon like Kirk did.
Apparently Mythbusters did an episode where they tried to recreate that weapon.
Yeah.
Didn't work.
I'm shocked.
Well, it's funny because I've seen this episode, I don't know, 5-6 times. Every time I watch it, when I'm watching him build the weapon, I'm like sitting forward in my seat trying to understand how this thing works.
Okay. So you've got sulfur.
Yes.
And you've got diamonds, which still remain in the 23rd century the hardest known substance in the galaxy.
I feel like that's not the case.
Yeah. But okay. According to them,
adamantium isn't in that universe.
And there's one other, phosphates that I think they threw in there.
Right.
How exactly did Kirk get it to ignite? I don't recall that part.
Well, he lit a fire using coal and sparking it off that metal microphone thing he was carrying.
Yeah.
I never understood the point of that microphone, actually, because they give it to both him and the Gorn, and Kirk decides to start doing logs with it.
Well, I thought it was supposed to be like the universal translator.
Well, it kind of was.
Yeah.
Because the Gorn is talking to Kirk through it, but Kirk is doing like captain's logs into it.
Yeah, that didn't... okay. Sometimes these captain logs, like,
oh,
you know, it's 1960s television.
Yeah.
But you literally see Kirk beamed onto this planet, and then you come back from commercial break, and he's going, "Captain's log, I've just been beamed onto a planet." It's like, really? Are you speaking in first person in real time, like right then and there? You're narrating it, bro. It's like, yes, exposition central. That was clunky.
If you were dropped on a planet with a Gorn that wanted to kill you, and they hand each of you like metal microphones, does it occur to you to start doing captain's logs?
That could end up on my epitaph, so I maybe, just maybe. It'd be like, this is the last memory anybody will have for me. I love you, Mom. Yeah. I don't think it's out of question here.
Now, one thing I want to talk about is the idea of villainizing the Gorn. Because what I love about the original series is that the Gorn are viewed as enemies throughout the episode, but we learn through the Metrons. And if you want to hear more about the Metrons, you can go to our Starfleet versus Superpowered Beings episode. We talk about them.
Yeah.
But, you know, we learn that the Gorn weren't evil. They thought they were being invaded by Starfleet. And it kind of takes away that element of ugly aliens are evil that we talk a lot about on this show and that Star Trek seems to often support.
Oh, yeah.
But when we get to Slar on the Enterprise episode, it becomes a little shadier because, again, he's...
No, not at all.
You don't think so?
No, it's a mirror universe, Cam.
Well, that's true enough.
So everybody's evil there, so I think that can totally support the idea that Gorn are just misunderstood.
Yeah, I guess that's fair enough.
He is a slave master. Yeah, in a mirror universe.
He's a misunderstood slave master.
I bet if he was in the regular universe, he'd be like, I don't know, a rowing instructor. Something like that.
Row, row, row.
Yeah. And then Spock, Kirk, and McCoy can chime in and start singing campfire songs. Anyway.
That would be amazing. But to me, like, I wish that Enterprise had found a more compelling reason to bring the Gorn back. Like, I'm okay with Slar.
I think it was just fan service. So they're
definitely fan service.
They knew they were getting canceled. They're like, guys, this could be the last time we see Star Trek on TV for, it's going to be like 12 years at this point.
Right.
But why don't we just go all out, everybody wants to see Gorn.
Now, you know, I said, you know, the CG doesn't really hold up well, but what do you think of the actual design? Because I know that they had a lot of, back and forth when designing the Gorn for Enterprise because, you know, do you replicate that 1966 suit or does it look ridiculous on Enterprise? And they ultimately go with CG and do a, you know, fairly drastic redesign. How do you feel about the redesign?
I didn't think it was a fairly drastic redesign.
You didn't think so?
No. It looks
much more Raptor-like to me now.
Well, I get what you're saying. I mean, it's... Also takes place a century earlier.
Right.
And I would say, does every single Gorn look identical?
Well, exactly. Yeah,
you know, like, if you lined up, say, you know, Ben Sisko next to Chief O'Brien, you know, maybe some aliens would be like, oh, it's radical redesign of a human, right?
There's a podcast in another universe right now.
Exactly, yeah. So to me, it seems fine. It's just Slar has, you know, sharper features than the Gorn captain.
Right.
So I'm okay with that. Star Trek Discovery. Do we need Gorn back? The Gorn Armada?
You see, to me, the Gorn are the one alien where I feel like, you know, I said about the Orions, I'd like to see them just peppered all throughout society.
Okay.
You know, and we do see a Gorn on the Elysian Council in Time Trap as well. So, I mean, the idea of having Gorns in the background of scenes isn't unheard of in the franchise. But I feel like the Gorn are special in the way that, like, Boba Fett is special in the Star Wars universe, where he's iconic, cool, he had his showcase moments, but you milk him too much and you lose that mystique. Like, I feel like there's mystique to the Gorn.
I'll rationalize it like this. Mm-hmm. Discovery takes place 10 years before the original series, and they had never encountered the Gorn prior to the original series episode.
So we thought. Well, I guess Mirror Universe, yeah. You're right. Yeah, it's open to it.
So if we never see them again, I'm okay with it. If they do pop up as mystery aliens who aren't recorded for some reason, which happened a lot on Enterprise. anyway, I would say we need to go back to practical effects here. We can't do another CG Gorn. I want to see kind of what Enterprise did with the Andorians. Like, he gave them some badass antennae. Mm-hmm. The makeup looks great. It's updated. Make those makeup guys really you know, stretch themselves and go for it, I'd say.
Right. Yeah. I mean, do you think the likelihood of that happening, though, is good? Because I, to me,
do you think it's,
I think it's CG.
It's CG.
I don't even think it's a question, especially nowadays.
Yeah. I just
it's
don't.
It's so much easier to just CG it in.
I know it is, but I don't, I still don't think, look, TV budget's going to be way higher for Discovery than anything we've ever seen in Star Trek before.
Yeah.
I still watch Game of Thrones, and every time the dragons appear, I'm just like, those look great. But I know that they're CG. It's just, right. it takes me out of it. And if it's supposed to be a character, I'm just like, I want the practical effects. What's most likely going to happen? Yeah, I would say probably CG. But what would you want, Cam?
In a perfect world, I would be so down with CG. If we were seeing CG on the level of like the Apes and the Planet of the Apes films,
right.
the new yeah. ones, not the old ones. Sure. I'm really fighting for the 1968 Apes.
Well, hey, back to like 1960s of Star Trek too.
Yeah. But, you know, if they could do prosthetics like, say, the 2001 Planet of the Apes,
yeah.
the Tim Burton one.
Yeah, those are fantastic.
That would be amazing to see, you know, a creation like that. And we've seen things that were prosthetics that did look that good, you know, in like even some of the Peter Jackson Lord of the Rings movies, not the Hobbit movies. Lord of the Rings were some pretty amazing prosthetic makeup. So I would love to see it. But to me, I think it's going to be CG and I think it's going to be, you know, TV CG.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's better than, what was that show, Terra Prime?
Oh, with the dinosaurs?
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully they look better than those.
That was a pretty expensive show as well.
It was.
But, you know, if you look at how VFX have just jumped just in the intervening years, yeah. you go from year to year, you're always amazed by what they're going to be able to do. And I'll say this based on that teaser that we saw for Discovery. Look, the CG for this show looks pretty badass for something we're going to be watching on television.
I have one modest request.
Yes, sir.
Whoever designs the Gorn, I do not want it to be the person that designed the Klingons.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I can ask. What would, if that person was in charge, yeah. what would the new Gorn look like, Cam?
Well,
would they be like jacked up like to the nth degree? Would they have to hire the guy who played the Orion in Borderlands to just like paint body makeup on him and make this power lifter like the new Gorn?
Maybe. Yeah. But a few years ago, they put out a statue that was a Gorn like for the J.J. Abrams universe. Like it was a redesign of what a Gorn would look like in the J.J. Abrams universe. I think it was used in maybe, I don't know, one of the games or something like that. But they put out these statues into the marketplace to sell. It looked awful. Like it was that like over-designed alien yeah. creation, kind of like the school of thought that produced the Alien in Super 8. You know,
sure,
where you're like,
yeah,
what
yeah.
am I looking at? Or well, the, or well, the just, Cloverfield monster type
where
look?
It's just kind of a blob of like way too much going on.
Exactly. Like it looked okay. like that. And so I'm terrified of something like that. Like, I think while I...
Keep
while
it
I have,
simple, right?
Yeah, while I have issues with the Enterprise Gorn, when I look at it, I know what it looks like.
Yeah.
And to me, that is that needs to be the case, because the original Gorn, it turns around to the camera, boom, it's in your mind. You know, you don't need to sit there and be like, do you remember the Gorn? The what? Describe it to me. You know, like, you know the Gorn the second he appears on screen. So I think that's important.
Yeah, we should not be scratching our heads when the Gorn appears on Discovery and we're like, what alien is that supposed to be?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think it would look like? Do you think it would look like that J.J. Abrams universe creation? Something along those lines?
I don't think so. I think you might see something that's sort of a minor evolution off the Enterprise episode,
okay.
I hope.
Okay.
Because to me, I'm like... That's not going into like terrible territory.
My least favorite thing about, I don't know, the evolution of Star Trek designs is like how, if you look at the designs of, say, the starships, they get more and more streamlined.
Right.
And I love the round puffiness of certain ships. I love how they don't look like arrowheads necessarily. I want more of that. And that goes for the alien designs as well. I don't need like this streamlined, like you said, kind of a velociraptor sort of look.
Right.
Okay.
Did the Gorn kind of ruin other lizard men characters for Star Trek? Because you don't see other lizard aliens.
You see the Zindi.
The Zindi, yeah.
The Zindi
yeah,
lizard.
I guess that's fair. Yeah.
The Jem'Hadar, I'd say it has a reptilian look
yeah.
to it. But beyond that, yeah, look, I don't think the designers wanted to just be derivative of the Gorn the rest of the time, so maybe it was just simpler to stay away. Also, just from a production standpoint,
yeah,
I don't think that's going to be super easy making it convincing reptiloids every like week in, week out. I think they're able to do it with the Zindi just because by that point it had probably gotten easier for makeup purposes.
That's a great example, though, the Zindi reptiles of how to do a Gorn in practical.
Yeah.
Because I think the Zindi reptiles look really badass.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. What about the Zindi insectoids? Is it back to that CG kind of problem?
Yeah.
They're not super convincing.
I don't like the Zindi insectoids very much. I actually do like, though, the aquatic Zindi, who are also CG.
Yeah.
To me, they just work better.
But the thing is... all you have to do is see them in their tanks.
Yeah.
It's not like they're interacting with what's going on in the rest of the crew, and you've got this Who Framed Roger Rabbit effect, right?
Yeah, but so. With no steamrollers in sight.
I love those holes that they have in Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Just toss the hole and... Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
Cameron, is that it for our show today? Anything else we might want to cover here?
Well, we have one more alien we are going to talk about who we left out of the title because they're not green.
Okay. That's how dumb we are. We can't really think beyond simple primary colors.
Right. Well, you know, before we had tackled the Tellarites and the Andorians, and we knew we wanted to tackle the Orion and the Gorn. But we thought it would be good to kind of wrap up our TOS alien discussion with another recurring alien species from that series that is pretty iconic and has a lot of promise going forward, and that's the Tholians.
Yes. Of course, these are these kind of crystalline spider sort of beasts.
They look like crabs more to me.
Look like, well, I'm going to spoil something. I'm going to go into some Enterprise trivia. I actually watched the audio commentary for Inamir Darkly Part 2 as part of like some research. I've watched that episode so many times. It's like, I'll just play the audio commentary. And Mike Sussman, the writer of the show, he said that the design they were looking for when they did Inamir Darkly Part 2, or was it Part 1?
Part 1.
Going for a crystalline spider. And that's, I think, what they look like in that rendition.
Yes.
Cam, tell me, what about their rendition when they pop up in the view screen in the Tholian web for the first time?
Yeah, this episode I love. When they pop up in the Tholian web, we first see their ships, and it's these little triangles that look very diminutive and not very imposing. And then they start building the web, which is really weird. But we see the Tholian, and to me, what was very noteworthy about them watching that series was that I had no idea what a Tholian looked like. It's kind of this predator vision look that is obscured, and it makes me really fascinated to know. And I don't have the details to really, you know, delve into, but...
You had to use your imagination?
Well, no, just that I would love to know what the thinking was creatively and how they want to portray the Tholians.
Well, I still have to think that kind of spider idea. I know you said crab, but I mean, like, they are literally building a web.
Right.
So I think that was part of it, but... Look,
wait, are you saying crabs don't build webs?
Maybe genetically modified crabs do.
Okay.
I don't know.
This is why I'm not a biologist.
Okay. Well, anyway, but what was going into the thought process here? When you see them on screen, they're pretty much kind of these red angled sort of blobs.
Yeah.
It almost looks as if maybe they're wearing helmets or something like that. But
it looks sort of like that.
Yeah. But you find out by Enterprise, that's not the case. Like that is what they appear like. Yeah. I don't know. The Tholians had much less to do with the Tholian web than I remembered. Like, this is one of the episodes that I watched, you know, back when I was a kid. I remember being at my grandma's house, watching this with her.
Yeah.
And
a real highlight of season 3.
It is, but I had forgotten, like, how much of this episode was just about Kirk fading in and out of the ship and how little the Tholians were actually part of it.
Yes. It's fascinating, isn't it? It's like a lot of these episodes that you recall as being very alien-centric, and then you watch them and it's like, huh.
Yeah. What do you think, though, of the concept of this Tholian web? Is it a practical weapon?
This seems like something we need to be applying in our military.
okay.
Yeah, this is a very questionable weapon that makes actually zero sense, I think, in space.
Yes.
Because
why not fly around it?
How would you trap anything?
They'd have to keep flying into it, like...
Because it's not quick.
No, it takes a long time, and especially if you're starting with two ships.
Yes.
I think they kind of address that issue with Inamir Darkly Part 2.
Right.
In which they've got a lot of ships going, and they make a three-dimensional web, but as it's portrayed in Enterprise, it's a two-dimensional web.
Oh, you mean in the original series?
I'm sorry, yeah. In the original series. Is it really just because they're kind of stuck in that weird space? And
possibly.
Okay. And
I'm willing to accept that, yes.
Or is it because, like, Spock's being very stubborn about not going anywhere and that's why they're sticking around? Like, I did not understand why the Enterprise could not easily avoid getting trapped in the Tholian web.
What do you think Kirk would have done had he been at the helm at that point?
Was he trying to rescue a crew member aboard the Defiant at that point?
Yes. Does he put up with it?
What would Kirk have done?
Yeah.
I think he would have honestly gotten the Tholian on the view screen again and make some chitter chatter, like try to talk him through some sort of course of action.
Because the thing is, like, you know,
Spock takes a lot of hell for, like, firing on the Tholians.
Right, right. Because when we think about the episode Arena, Spock is, like, the lone voice being like, we should not be attacking the Gorn. We should not do this. So, like, it makes sense to me that he wouldn't go after the Tholians either.
Yeah.
It would be true to character.
Yeah,
you know, of respecting life. And he doesn't seem that concerned, really, about the Tholian web. I mean, I guess I wouldn't be either, but...
Okay. Okay. What makes the Tholians, though, so iconic? If they're only on screen for just a little bit, they have kind of a stupid weapon.
Yeah.
Why are they in the same conversation as, say, the Orions or the Gorn, for example?
I think they benefit a lot from having an episode named after them. It stands out when you're, you know, just thinking of classic episodes. The Tholian web is one that pops out. And I think the web image in space is something that people have really held on to.
I think so.
I don't think anyone takes anything from the visual of the Tholian in the Tholian's web.
Like the view screen visual?
Yeah. As like a lasting iconic image of Star Trek. It's not one I see on t-shirts.
Just a red blob?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think they do a lot of clever things with sort of the communication between, you know, the Enterprise and the Tholians. You know, we get that they're xenophobic and rather hostile.
Yeah.
But it's not like we get the level of sort of even the interest that we get in, like, the Gorn or the Orion.
So when we flash forward to Enterprise and they do pop up on screen, first episode was Future Tense.
Yeah.
Again,
we actually don't see one in that.
Yeah, we hear them. We hear them because they don't pop up in the view screen. We just hear them through the communications array. And Hoshi doesn't even have a particularly easy time translating what they're screeching. Although Archer doesn't really care for the screeching noises that these guys are making, but. In this brief appearance on Enterprise, what did you make of the return of the Tholians? Was it anticlimactic?
Well, the Tholians, it seems at this point in the franchise, going off of the Tholian web into Future Tense, the Tholians are more plot devices. They're something to add to the tension we've seen in the Tholian web. They're building the web the whole episode. It's kind of like a ticking clock scenario.
Yeah.
In this episode, you know, it's about this pod from the 31st century that the Suliban really want and the Enterprise have. So we have the tension between these two fighting over a pod, and then they throw in the Tholians as sort of another threat, just to kind of ramp up the stakes. So again, the Tholians aren't coming into this story organically. Like, they are thrown in as a plot mechanic. You know, it's not like the exploration of Tholian culture ties into this episode.
No, not at all.
But I will say, I really do love that scene you talked about where they are communicating with the Enterprise. I love the idea of a species that when they talk, it's awful.
Yeah.
Like, it hurts people's ears.
I've gotten feedback from listeners about my own voice on the show, so I feel you there.
From me as well.
Yeah.
And so, like, I really enjoy that aspect of the Tholians. The episode itself, we see their ships. We don't see any webs, which I thought was at least interesting. You know, it's kind of surprising they would bring them in and not keep that on the table.
But, you know, maybe that web technology, it wasn't ready for prime time by that point. I don't know.
Maybe.
But although, look, we go to the Mirror Universe, we briefly talked about it, but we do see that they do have the web tech in the Mirror Universe, at least.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where it originated from, and I don't
know.
Who are the good Tholians? Who are the bad Tholians, depending on the universe? Are there good Tholians in the Mirror Universe?
Well, that's the thing. Do you think the Tholians have positive qualities? Because to me, they feel like a bit of an alien species that's written to be almost always, like, portrayed villainously.
Yeah. In every single portrayal that we've seen, which hasn't been that much.
Like, they don't have qualities that are easily written positively. Like, with Klingons, say, they have a warrior culture, but there's honor to that. There's nobility. There's a way to twist that into something that's an ally or a friend. Tholians are xenophobic. Like, how twist that one?
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. Do you want... Do you want a non-xenophobic main character on Star Trek Discovery, Cam?
Yeah, I don't know. And they exude radiation. Are people going to get sick around them?
And also, they need to be within 200 degrees Celsius in order to survive. So I, what would this guy need, like, his own EV suit to walk around, or she need to walk around the ship on or something?
They can't be all bad because, you know, there's a Tholian ambassador gives Sisko Tholian silk for Cassidy Yates in Way of the Warrior.
Yeah.
And so, like, the idea that Tholians are having interactions with humans that are, normal interactions, it does exist.
Although, Cam, Tholian silk could be an insult. It's these things grow in 200-degree weather.
Right.
Maybe silk would, like, burn her skin off. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. But it is interesting to me that, like,
Are xenophobes redeemable? Is that what you're asking?
Yes. Yes. Like, is there a way to make this race, like, something that's more friendly or positive without taking away what they are?
Well, it's completely counter to the Star Trek universe ideal of inclusiveness, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. Are there... The problem is you'd have to say, sure, there might be a couple Tholians that are not xenophobic, but what we're finding out though is the vast majority of this race is. So
yes.
Yeah, I don't know if they can exactly be redeemed to a certain degree. I think they'd work still as antagonists if they were brought up into Star Trek Discovery.
I think
not necessarily
so too.
Uneasy allies. I don't see that.
I think it would be interesting to explore the Tholians more because the sense that, as you said, they represent what the Federation, you know, doesn't.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they are standing up for being isolationists and aggressive about it, whereas Starfleet's about expanding outwards and being inclusive. So I would like to see more of an examination of Tholian culture in that regard. I don't know that the show is interested in doing that. Like, I think one of the issues with the Tholians is actually their visual, which is that it's a very cool visual to see briefly, but I don't know that it would really work to have scenes of, like, a Tholian emoting.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not an expressive look.
Yeah.
So it's tougher to write it as a ongoing character or a real showcase character.
I agree with that. But I thought the updated look that we saw in Enterprise was like a cool natural progression of that initial design. So I am curious how they would appear in Discovery. I'm all for bringing them back.
I like that update much more than I like the Gorn one.
Right.
I think it's much more successful.
But it makes sense because, like, you see, you're introduced to the Gorn as this practical beast.
Yes.
Whereas the Tholians, what are they really when you see them on the view screen?
Well, I guess it was practical, but it has so many weird effects on it that it looks strange.
Yeah.
Originally.
It's a strange blob. So if you see them as kind of these crystalline spiders in Enterprise, then works for me.
Yeah. Do you think we will see more Tholians?
I think we have a much greater chance of seeing the Orions featured prominently than we do the Tholians.
Yeah.
I don't see much future for them.
I was amused that the one, like, real footnote of the Tholians on TNG is that they destroyed the starbase that Kyle Riker was hanging out on.
That's Kyle Riker's usual excuse. Tholians did it. Have some silk.
Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. But before we sign off, I want to just reference a YouTube comment that one of our listeners posted. So we've been putting videos up on the Facebook page. Tyler, where is that?
Go to facebook.com/subspacepod or just search Subspace Transmissions in Facebook. Just push like button. That's all we ask. It's a free show. Our show does better if you guys push the like button. That's all I'm saying.
And these videos will take snippets from the podcast and will include images that kind of maybe add to the context or what have you. We had one up recently about Dr. Soong, and we recorded that episode with your sister, Jenna Orton. And we had a listener, Kimberly, wrote in a comment that actually really made me laugh. She's made a number of comments on our videos, and I always crack up. They're pretty insightful and fun. But she had a reference to Soong and says, "The dude straight up looks like a splice between a human and a triceratops. Just the way his head goes into his neck, connecting to his weird stooped-over body. And the fact that he had some kind of dinosaur motif going on in his hideout just adds to the weirdness."
So was he the inspiration for that triceratops we saw in Jurassic Park just laying like a blob on the ground and he was all sick?
It was like the ending of that episode.
Yeah,
the Brothers,
yeah, that's true.
Where he's laying on the ground. This
And Laura Dern comes around scooping his Dr. Soong's dung.
That's another episode that it's just waiting to be written. But I am interested about this comment she makes because it's something I'd never thought about, which is that he looks kind of reptilian in that way and that he does have these dinosaurs around his office. Is there some sort of connection between Soong and the dinosaurs?
I've never ever contemplated that.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was intentional on the part of the writers, but it could totally have been something that maybe the art department interpreted.
Right. I wish I could like wrap my head around the inclusion of the dinosaurs because it must mean something. Like, there's a reason for them being there.
Well,
I think
it represents maybe an evolution of Earth life. You know, goes from dinosaur to man to android. Right.
Did he have a lot of man figures? Was there like a Ken doll?
No, but he's a man. Right, yes. I think that's what the dinosaurs there were representing. It's like, look, this is a man that's building androids. Look at where life on Earth started, you know, with the dinos.
Where was the prehistoric man figures?
I don't know.
Anyways, thank you, Kimberly, for the comment. I made my day when I read it. So, if you have any comments or questions, you can send them in to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com. Let us know what you think of the aliens we've talked about today, the Orion, the Gorn, and the Tholians. Would you like to see more of them? Have they been shortchanged by the franchise? And will Discovery bring them back in new and interesting ways? We would love to read those responses on the air. Now, Tyler, what are we doing next week?
Doing Star Trek's most awkward moments. This is an episode I can't believe we have not done yet, Cam, but...
I think because we have them all on this podcast.
Pretty much, yeah. But we're going to be going through some of the most awkward kind of things that have ever happened on Star Trek. And Cam, there's a lot to dissect here.
Are you sure?
Oh, yes.
This is going to be a short episode, right? Like maybe like 5 minutes? Because I can't think of many.
No, not at all. Anyway.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to that. So you can also reach us on the Twitter... I'm at Cam, V as in Vina, not a real Orion, Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-N, N as in Navdar, that Orion slave girl from Bound.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.